Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
How will you make 2019 the best year of your life? I don't know. But I do know that 2019 is made up of time, right? You get 12 months, 52 weeks, 365 days, you get 8,760 minutes, 525,600 minutes. I screwed up the amount of minutes and hours, dang it. You guys missed the amazing performance. Oh well. 2019 will be made up of time, and how this year goes is based on how you use that time. We're in this series called Life Hacks, and we are learning strategies for winning in the biggest game of all. You know, the sad truth is most people don't love the way their life is going, and part of the problem is how we use our time. So I want to see if today maybe we can change how we approach time. We looked at a couple Bible verses last week. We looked at Ephesians chapter 5, verses 15 and 16. We're going to put all the Bible verses on the screen for you, and we give away free Bibles at the Velcro bar after the service. It says this: be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. So from this passage last week, we learned how to be wise and a secret to making like wise decisions. But there's another idea in here, which is your time is really valuable, so make the most of it. Life is the most precious commodity we have, and life is time. So time is the most precious commodity we have. There's a prayer in the Bible in Psalm 90, verse 12. It says, teach us, God, teach us to number our days so that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Teach us to number our days so that we may gain a heart of wisdom. The reason we tend to spend our hours so cheaply is because we think there's an unlimited supply of them. But the Bible reminds us repeatedly that there is a very limited supply of time, at least here on earth, and therefore we should put a high premium on every single day. While I was working on this, I decided to try to literally number my days. So the average lifespan is 78 years. If you live to be 78 years, it means you have 28,470 days of life, which sounds like a lot, but I've already lived about 17,900 of those days, which means I only have 10,570 days left. Guys, do you know what that means? I try, if I can, to watch SportsCenter twice a day, every day. This means I only have 21,140 SportsCenters left to watch. No! But seriously, think about this. I have, maybe, if I'm lucky, 10,570 days left, which may sound like a lot. But if you had only $10,570, and that was all the money you were going to have for the rest of your life, man, every single dollar would matter, right? Every dollar would be precious to you. And every day we have is precious. That's why the verse we looked at said, make the most of every opportunity. So how do we do this? How should we approach our time? Well, most people who are like experts on this talk about getting control of your time, and they say that life can be divided into four quadrants. That's where we start. And they would say that someone whose life is in control has a balanced life. And so all four quadrants are in a relative degree of balance. Not exactly the same amount of time, but relative. And so what goes in those four quadrants? The experts would say that the first quadrant's your job or school. The second is relationships, so like family and friends. The third quadrant is recreation, so like what you do for rest, relaxation, hobbies. And then the fourth quadrant is spiritual, so the things that you do for God. And so most experts would argue that a balanced life would have those four different quadrants in somewhat equal proportion. What I want to do today is tell you how three different people approach their time, okay? The first person's circle doesn't look like that balanced circle. It looks more like this. So half of their time, half of the pie, goes to just one of the quadrants of life. And then two other quadrants get some time, and then there's just like a little sliver for one of the quadrants. We could call a person who lives this way out of control. This person's life is kind of chaotic. Now, if you talk to this person, they don't know. Like, they don't know that their life is out of control. They think this is normal. If you ask them how life is going, they'll say, it's good. Everything's fine. Or maybe they do see a problem, but if they do, they think it's only temporary. And they'll tell you, yeah, my life is a little crazy right now, but it's just this, right now I got these things going on, but it will get back to normal soon. And the truth is, it never gets back to normal. The verses we looked at in Ephesians 5 would call this person foolish or unwise. Now, the big part of the pie, the 50%, can be any of the four different components of life. For some, it may be that they spend way too much time in recreation. So this is kind of like the guy who never grew up. He's always on the golf course. He's always watching sports. He's always playing video games. Or for others, it's relationships. This might maybe be most often true of teenagers who only have time for their friends and their grades are suffering and they don't have any time for their family or for God, but they got time for their friends, and it's true for some adults as well. For others, the big part of the pie might be the spiritual quadrant. And so this is the type of person who every time the doors of the church are open, they are there. They are in every group. They attend every function. They volunteer for every ministry, which are all really good things. But if it's hurting your job or your family life, if it doesn't give you any time to rest and recreate yourself, to have recreation, well, then it's a problem. Now, in our culture, I would guess for most people, the big slice of the pie, the 50%, for the greatest number of us would go to the area of work. And the kind of person who devotes that much time and that much focus to work is called a workaholic. I've had a few times in my life where somebody called me a workaholic. Do you know the problem with telling a workaholic that they're a workaholic? They think it's a compliment. They're like, thank you. You're right. I am a workaholic. And the workaholic needs to understand it. It's not a compliment, right? It is not a good way to live the one life that you have to live. People who live this way don't tend to be happy over the long run. And it's not much fun to be this person's spouse or to be this person's kids. And I would guess it's not much fun to be this person's God. Because the little sliver for this person most often tends to be spiritual. And so they're just kind of giving God their leftovers. Maybe they go to church once in a while. People who live this way need to understand that life is the most precious commodity we have. And so time is the most precious commodity we have, right? And when this person over the long haul lives this way, what they're doing is they're revealing what they truly value, right? What they're doing is revealing what they truly value, because time is the most precious commodity we have. And so whatever they're giving just a sliver to, that says something. And maybe it says something that you really don't want to say. And so maybe it's time to stop living an out-of-control life. The second person circle is kind of that first circle we looked at. It's a person who's living a balanced life. We could call this person in control. Ephesians 5 might call this person wise. They're making the most of every opportunity. This person has learned that God created them to do work. Work is actually a good thing. This person knows the value of relationships. This person has a recreational quadrant. They rest, they relax, they have hobbies. And this person has a growing relationship with God. Like they take time to listen to God through reading the Bible. They take time to talk to him through praying. They make it a priority to be at church and be in group every week. They find time to volunteer. So this person's living a balanced life. And check this out. There are actually people who live this way. Like, it might sound like this, you know, this myth or this. No, there are people in this church who actually live this way. For others of us, it just kind of sounds like a good idea, right? Okay, so far, two people. Person one is out of control, way too much time is devoted to one component of life. Person two is in control, living a balanced life. And let's say that you take an honest look at yourself and you realize, oh man, like I admit it, my life is not balanced. I'm kind of out of control. How do you move from circle one to circle two? Well, step one, the biggest barrier for most people moving from circle one to circle two is denial. It's denial. People whose lives are out of control tend not to see it. They tend not to admit it. And so the first step is to say, I've got a problem. Like, this is not the best way to live my life. God, I need your help. And then step two is to learn how to manage your time. I'm going to give you just a few quick time management principles. Obviously, you can study this a lot more online, and there's great books. But one is to establish priorities. But like using godly wisdom and having an eternal perspective, ask yourself, what's important to me? But like, what really matters to me? Because I'll tell you, there are far too many wives who never get taken out on a date. There are far too many kids whose parents never play with them. There are far too many Bibles that don't get read. Far too many churches that don't get attended much. And what we would say is, I know and I hate it. I just don't have the time. You know that's not true, right? But like, we all get the same amount of time. It's not about the amount of time you have. It's about your priorities. It's about what's important to you. And here's the scary question none of us want to ask, but we have to. What if you get to the end of your life and realize that you lived your life wrong? Like, what if at your funeral, the eulogy for you is, he was the best at binge watching Netflix shows. He was awesome at that. Or she was a workaholic. Or what if the eulogy is, I want to tell you all about this woman's life and the level she got to on Candy Crush on her phone. Like, extraordinary. What a life she lived. Or he was working out in the gym all the time. You should see his corpse. Are you going to be okay with that, right? And then after your funeral, what happens is you stand in front of God, and you and God look at your life together, and you evaluate your life together. And what do you want to see? And so using godly wisdom and an eternal perspective, establish your priorities. The second tip is know how you spend your time. It is really hard to get control of your time if you don't even really know what you're doing. And so here's something you'll hate doing, but it's so worth it. Take a little notebook or a piece of paper, and for a week, maybe 2 weeks, write down what you did every 15 minutes. Write down what you just did the last 15 minutes. At the end of the week, you will be shocked at how much time you waste. It will be stunning to you. And that's the third tip. Identify and eliminate time wasters. Get rid of them. Which is not saying you can't have any fun, you can't have any fun thing, you know, recreation. That recreation is part of a healthy life. But if you're spending hours a day on Facebook, if you're spending hours playing games on your phone or binge watching season after season of TV shows every day, and then you say, I just don't have enough time to exercise, to be at church, to read my Bible, to go out on a date with my spouse, to hang out with my kids. Think, if you just cut 1 hour of a time waster a day, then you're going to have an extra 7 hours a week. 7 hours is a lot of time to invest in something that's important to you. Fourth, plan your schedule. So people tend to work better with a set schedule, at least for the important things that really matter, your top priorities. Put them in your calendar. Schedule them so you're not just leaving it to chance. Hopefully I'll get that done. And then fifth, learn to say no. Like, you have to say no to some good things so you can say yes to better things. Okay, so if you need to move from circle one to circle two, from out of control to in control, out of balance to balance, first step, overcome denial. Second step, learn how to manage your time. and it looks like we are done. No, we're not. Because remember, I said I want to tell you about how three people approach their time. How the third person approaches their time is the goal. Living a balanced life is not the goal. Okay, how the third person approaches their time, this is the life hack. So this third person, kind of like the second person, has four quadrants, we all do, and like the second person, they're kind of divided into basically equivalent quadrants. But at the center of this person's circle, there's another circle. It's a circle that kind of fits into all four, and in that circle is God. The circle represents God. For this person, God is not a quadrant of life. For this person, faith is not something they prioritize. Faith is their life. For this person, prayer is not a part of their life. Their life is a prayer. For this person, no matter what they're doing, whether it's their job, recreation, relational, or spiritual, they know God is with me in that moment. God made that promise to us. So way back in the Old Testament, before Jesus came, God said in Isaiah 41:10, "So do not fear, for I am with you." And Jesus' last words to us on earth before he went to heaven were, "I am with you always." And so the goal for this person is to understand and recognize that God is with me every single moment. And so everything I do would be because of God, with God, and for God. Here's one way the Bible says this in 1 Corinthians 10:31. It says, "So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God." You know, some Christians never get this, and this is the life hack. This is how we should approach our time. But some Christians never get this, and if you don't get this, like, you miss it. Like, you miss out. So I became a Christian out of a completely non-Christian background at the age of 20, and shortly after I became a Christian, someone gave me as a gift a little book called The Practice of the Presence of God. It's by a guy named Brother Lawrence, who was a monk in the 1600s. And I was like, yay, thank you. I love monks. I don't want to read this book. Like, reading a book by a monk written in the 1600s sounded about as boring and bad as getting a root canal in front of a TV that had C-SPAN on constantly. I was like, I don't want to read this book, but this person gave it to me. I had to. And I started reading it, and it turns out that this book changed my life. This Brother Lawrence guy made a decision in his life that he wanted to spend every moment of his life with God. No, that is not the right way to say it. Because we do spend every moment of our life with God, whether we decide to or not. The thing is, most of us spend most of our time ignoring God. And so it's more like Brother Lawrence decided that he wanted to spend every moment of his life aware that God was with him and actively engage in a conversation with God, even if it was just under the surface because he had to be doing other things in his life. He called it practicing God's presence. It's choosing to focus on the fact that God is with me and making sure that I'm not ignoring him. And I read this and I realized that is what God has invited me into. God has not asked me just to believe in him. God invited me into a relationship with him, and I had said yes. So I had invited God into my life. So he was in my life now. That means that God was always with me, and I should act like it. And so I decided I want to practice God's presence like Brother Lawrence. Listen, that's what God wants all of us to do. God loves you, and he wants to do life with you. And when we make this decision, like Brother Lawrence did, It changes our lives. There was another guy, his name was Frank Laubach. Frank Laubach was a teacher, he was a Christian. At the age of 45, he took an honest look at his life and he thought, I have wasted my time. I have wasted my entire life. And he had a moment of decision. It happened at a place called Signal Hill. He's 45 years old. In the next 40 years, Frank Laubach became one of the most widely known and loved people in the entire world. He wrote over 55 books, several of which became bestsellers and had worldwide influence. He's considered to be, by many, the best educator of modern times. An organization he started has helped over 100 million people learn how to read. He even got his face on a U.S. postage stamp. Wow! Like, 45 years of nothing and then 40 years of wow. What happened at Signal Hill? At Signal Hill, Frank Laubach made the decision that he was going to spend every moment the rest of his life trying to stay focused on God. He devoted himself to always looking for God and listening for God throughout every moment of every day. He dedicated himself to being attentive to whatever opportunity God might be presenting him, and he vowed that he was going to seize every opportunity God put in front of him. It became his lifelong goal. He wrote that day, "Can I bring the Lord back into my mind's flow every few seconds so that God shall always be in my mind? I choose to make the rest of my life an experiment in answering this question." And he credits all of the success of the next 40 years of his life to that decision. Now, the goal of us making this decision, and I just want to tell you, I have been praying all week that we would literally make this decision today, okay? The goal is not success. The goal is to actually live our lives in a relationship with God, to really live life in a relationship with God. And if you do this, it may not lead to you getting your face on a postage stamp, wah, wah, but it is a life hack that will absolutely change your life. Do you see why? Is your mind kind of already going there? Like, one is, you will never feel alone. You'll never feel alone. Don't you hate feeling alone? Not being alone. Like, being alone okay, sometimes is okay. I like to be alone sometimes. But feeling alone. But man, when you realize that God is always with you, and you decide to start actually paying attention to him, you discover that you're never alone. So you're talking to someone and you're in a really complicated situation with them. This is a really difficult conversation that you're having. You need to do it right. You're nervous. But then you realize, I'm not alone in this conversation. And so you start to have another conversation with God. It's like this undercurrent of prayer. God, help me, help me, help me. Or you find out some good news and it's really exciting, but you've got no one with you to share it with. Yes, you do. And so you say, God, thank you, thank you, thank you. You high five, maybe don't high five, that's probably not a good idea. This will change, this life hack will change your life. Why? One, you'll never feel alone, and two, it will fill every moment with purpose. If you recognize that you are doing life with God, like you are in a partnership with God, even the most boring moments of life will not be boring anymore. Like, I hate washing dishes, but even still, occasionally I wash dishes. And I've always thought that is the most boring thing to do. But I don't think that anymore at all, because I know that God is with me. So when I'm washing dishes, I go, okay, this is a chance to pray. And so I talk to God. I pray for things that are important in my life, like in my world. And I pray for things that are important outside of my life, in the world. And I believe that God answers my prayers. So while I am washing dishes, I am literally changing the world. It's pretty exciting. The other day, I went to get my car smog checked. That's a lot of fun. Except when I was getting my car smog checked, I got to have this really cool conversation with a guy about God. And I got to invite him here to church. And it was really fun. See, now I realize wherever I go, I'm going there with God. And so I'm like, all right, God, like, let's figure out, like, how can we share your love with someone in this place? And so wherever I go, I have a chance to change somebody's life. When you realize that God is with you, always partnering with you, your life becomes an adventure, and every moment is pregnant with purpose. So how do we get better at this? Like, let's just say that you actually do this. You decide, man, if this is what God made my life for, I want to do this. I'm going to make that same decision Brother Lawrence and Frank Laubach made. I'm going to do this. It will be hard. Like, if you go, every moment I'm going to remember God's with me, you're going to have lots of moments where you're like, oh, I forgot that God's with me. I ignored him again. And so how do we get better at this? Two suggestions. The first is start your day with God. Start your day by taking, even if it's just a couple of minutes, to pray. Because it is much easier to keep your focus on God all day long if you started your day by fixing your focus on God. And then, in the rest of your day, put some reminders, because your mind is going to keep going the wrong direction, ignoring God. Put some reminders. Back in Jesus' time, they didn't have like clocks, and so bells from the Roman Forum would ring out at 6 a.m., 9 a.m., 12 p.m., 3 p.m., and 6 p.m. And what people would do back then is they would stop whatever they were doing, and they would use that as a way to remind them to pray. They would take that time to pray. We don't have bells from the Roman Forum ringing out, but we do have cell phones. And so what a lot of Christians do is they set their cell phone to go off maybe every hour, however often you want, and every time it dings, it's a reminder to just stop and say, wait, am I practicing God's presence right now? Am I consciously aware that he is with me? Are we in a dialogue? Are we partnering together right now? And if not, they realize that's not what I've been doing recently. Cool. That ding is there to remind me to call my attention back to God. Other Christians will use like a wristband or a bracelet to just always remind them. Or another thing some people do, you might want to do, probably you should do, put little post-it notes on every mirror in your house, in your car, and you should do that because you're always looking at yourself in the mirror. And so every time, I don't know if you are, you look like you do though, because you're a good-looking crowd. But every time you look in that mirror, there's a reminder, hey, God's with you right now. Like, use this as a chance to pray. The goal again is to actually live in a relationship with God, to understand and recognize that God is with me every moment. And so everything I do is because of God, with God, and for God. My favorite example of a person who actually lived this way was David from the Old Testament of the Bible. David saw God in everything. So like one time when he was a kid, his people, the Israelites, were in a battle with the Philistines, and the Philistines had this huge giant of a man, a bully named Goliath, and he was saying all kinds of bad things about God. He was shouting them out. And every soldier of the Israelites was terrified. But David, who was way too young to be a soldier, said, I'll fight him. And everybody's like, what? Why? And he said, because God is with me, I can't lose. There was another time when he got older, he was the king, and he committed like a really bad series of sins. He committed adultery with a woman and then had her husband killed to cover it up. And when he finally came to grips with what he had done, here's exactly what he said. He said, against God only have I sinned. Well, that's not true at all, right? It's like, no, you sinned against several people in this process. But it's like David was so obsessed with God, all he could think about was, I hurt my God. I hurt my God. There was another time when David led his army into battle, and when they returned from battle, they discovered that their houses had been invaded and all of their families had been taken away. All of David's men are furious, and they blame him, and they are about to kill him. What does David do? What would you do? The Bible says that David turned to God and took strength in God. He didn't freak out like I would. He didn't devise a strategy to recapture the goodwill of his men like I would. He didn't beg them for mercy. He ran straight to God. There's another time when those Philistines, the enemies, found David and they were going to kill him. And David comes up really fast with this creative, bizarre, awesome idea to pretend that he's insane. And it actually works. He pretends he's crazy, and the Philistines are like, oh, he's gone nuts. I guess let's not kill him. Let's just leave him. And they go. It's like, it works. And David sits down and celebrates by writing a song. And the theme of the song is, God just saved me. If I wrote the song, I would say, I just had the greatest idea. I saved myself. I am so smart. But he said, God saved me. Everywhere David looked, he saw God. Every thought he had found its way back to God. Every moment of his life was tethered to God. David lived a God-drenched life. And do you want to hear what God called David? God says in Acts chapter 13, verse 22, I have found David, son of Jesse, a man after my own heart. So David is a man after my own heart. Whoo, that's what I want to be. I'm not quite there yet, but I want to be a man after God's own heart. That's what I hope you'll be. Because that is where life is found. Like abundant, fulfilling life, enthusiastic, passionate life. It's when we take God from Sunday mornings to every moment of every day. When we take God from someone we believe in to someone we're actually doing life with. When we take God from a religion to a risky partnership that leads to an adventure. And that's why we end every service by shouting out together, Viva la Verve. Verve means abundant, fulfilling life, enthusiastic, passionate life. Viva la means live the. And life is the most precious commodity we have. We want our lives to be abundant and fulfilling and enthusiastic and passionate. And life is time. Right? Life is just a bunch of minutes that get put together. And the way we get to live the life that we want to live is by filling each of those minutes with God. We don't get many of them. And so every single minute counts. And when we do this, we will never feel alone. And we will find purpose and the adventure that we've been seeking. If we live every moment because of God, with God, and for God, that is the life hack. Don't miss next week because we're going to learn another one, and it's a life-changing life hack. Until then, and as always, Viva la Verve.